Speaker Allen.
Yeah, hi, I'm Allen. I'm an addict. For those of you who don't know, you're just about to miss all the good workshops. You know, there's self-acceptance, love or lust, living life on life's terms. And for those of you who just kind of came out of a nod, this, by the way, is an NA meeting, and we're talking about the service structure. I didn't want to scare you, but, you know, if you woke up and you didn't know what was going on, you might, like, freak. I would have, you know. So the concept today is the concept today is the concepts, and I'm a little nervous. Thanks for putting up with me here for a minute. Usually what happens is once I get going, it's like rolling downhill, but right now I'm like, oh my God, you know. I'm shocked that there are this many people here. I thought, well, you know, all things considered, the unknown principles, the 12 concepts of service, I can see why the other speaker didn't show up. That makes perfect sense to me. You know, why you guys came, I'm not sure, but, you know, if your sponsor sent you, it's okay. I'll sign your paper later, you know. I mean, you know, make sure you get it all done. The steps of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, are the things that sort of keep me alive. And if I don't work the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, my life gets unmanageable, it gets crazy, people don't like me, I isolate, I go off in strange directions. I make perfectly reasonable decisions to me that no one else ever think are completely reasonable decisions. And in fact, our literature says we are mismanagers all. In fact, that becomes characteristic of me when I don't work the steps in my life. When we don't work the traditions, we all face the possibility that we'll all die. It's like that. The 12 traditions, in my mind, are more important than the 12 steps because of that reason. Because it is a we program. The steps are involve a we element. In other words, you work the steps with your sponsor. You work the steps with your network. I have that experience. But a lot of that is I work the steps. But we work the traditions. That's absolutely clear. There's no, you know, I work the traditions on my own kind of thing and hope you guys will follow. Now, that's not to take away from the reality that working the traditions means that I, as an individual, need to work the traditions in order for we, as a group, to work the traditions. I heard the speaker in the last workshop say it. I absolutely agree with it. It is not, you can't talk about the group is working the traditions if the individuals in the group are not working the traditions. So I'm really just trying to kind of lay a broad framework here, let people come in and out. Yes, this is the concepts meeting, y'all. Anyway, I'm going to tell a little story, and I'm not really a history buff. I mean, that's not my background, although history has always been interesting to me. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to relate into the history just a little bit, because I want to give an idea about why I think that the traditions are so important. And the reason why I think the traditions are so important is there was a fellowship that was a huge fellowship in the mid-1800s, mid to early 1800s. It was a fellowship of one addict helping another addict. At that time, their focus was on alcohol, and they had other drugs that we don't even hear of nowadays, things like laudanum and stuff like that that we don't even talk about today. But their focus was on that. And in the 1840s, and I want to tell you that in the 1840s, after 5 years, they were bigger than Narcotics Anonymous was after 30. So in 5 years, in the 1800s, back when there were no telephones and there were no radios and, you know, and people were, there were no automobiles and people, word of mouth was on horseback and by buggy and on the river barges going up and down the Mississippi and stuff like that. That group was bigger than, in 5 years, than Narcotics Anonymous was in 30. So I'm going to go, and I suspect none of you have even heard of it. It's a group called the Washingtonians. Now, some of you have, service junkies all, you know. But but the deal is that most people have not even heard of this organization. And in fact, the founders, somebody at one time took it up to Bill Wilson and said, hey, have you heard of the Washingtonians? He'd never heard of it. You know, so this was an organization that was big. It was helping a lot of people recover, and guess what? It was gone. I mean, their story is like this, and this is—I read a little history book on it, I'm going to give you some what sound like facts. Understand that these are stylized facts, because my brain doesn't always remember exact facts. So just, you know, if you got a quote on it and you say no, you're off by 2%, then just, you know, cut me some slack. But roughly what happened was five guys got together in Baltimore. Yay, Baltimore. Right on. Woo-hoo. Five guys got together in Baltimore. One of them had just gotten out of jail. One of them had just been kicked out of his house by his wife again, you know, and they were sitting around commiserating about how, you know, they just couldn't do it anymore, you know, and it was terrible and they didn't know what they were going to do. And they said, you know, if I could sit in your pocket, I'm sure you'd keep me sober. You know, and they went, yeah, you know, I mean, you understand me, you know, none of them ever do, but you understand me. Yeah, you know, we could work together. Just, you know, we could probably do this thing. And they started doing it, and they actually stopped drinking for a while. And other people heard about that, and they went, oh, my God, there's a miracle going on in Baltimore. Another miracle going on in Baltimore. And they said, okay, we want to be a part of this thing. And so they went to go join these people. And after about a year, there was probably 10,000 of them after about a year. 10,000. It's a huge number. After a year. I mean, people all over the place. And they said, you know what? What we are doing has never been done before. We are the first. We are pioneers. And they named themselves after George Washington. And they took his as the date of their beginning, Washington's birthday. Just kind of made it up randomly. You know, they're drunks. They didn't know when they started. So they just kind of said, we started on February 14th, and there we go. Off we went, you know. And you know, I found out about this because I'm a political science major. And it turns out that after they had been in existence for a couple of years, they said, and they had what seems like a really good idea. And the good idea was, let us reach out to the community to be able to let them know about how good we're doing. And the way we're going to reach out to them to let them know how well we're doing is we are going to invite people to come and speak before our group. And you know, before they show up, of course, they're going to have to find out who are these people. And so they're going to find out about us. And so, you know, a little kind of a back and forth PR thing. We're going to get them to come speak. And they in Illinois, they got Abraham Lincoln to do it. And he was a guy who wrote down his speeches. And if you look in the archives of the speeches of Abraham Lincoln, you'll see Abraham's Lincoln address to the Washingtonians. And he got up, and I, you know, the truth is, it's a short little thing. It's not very memorable to me, but I know he said something like, you know, gosh, I don't know why you guys don't, you seem to have this weird relationship with alcohol, and I don't understand it. And I don't have that. I don't get it. But I understand that if I did, I'd be like you. God apparently gave you this curse. Don't know why, but because you all seem to be really smart and insightful individuals, and you know, blah blah blah, and you know, y'all keep doing what you're doing. It's great. And then he ended. And what happened 2 years later was everyone stopped going. Just stopped going. It just, you know, and the historian apparently went back and talked with one of those five guys. The only one of the five guys who was still alive. The other four had already died drunk, and the fifth apparently did die drunk too. And he talked to that one guy who was still remaining and said, what happened? He goes, I don't really know. You know, it wasn't interesting anymore. We just sort of lost our focus and lost the steam, and we just stopped meeting, and we got other things, and we got a life, and we just stopped going. Everyone just stopped going. And it disappeared, fell apart. The historian dug into it a little bit, and, you know, apparently what the group had done was they had reached out and embraced other causes. Like they had embraced the war against Mexico and the annexation of Texas and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You know, let's go get Santa Anna for what he did at the Alamo and you know, all that kind of stuff. And some got involved in temperance movements and just stuff like that, you know. And they started, you know, and what happened was, you know, it's like I can't go to that group. I can go to this group. you know, but I don't like what they're all about, and, you know, they're liberals and they're conservative, whatever they were doing, you know. And so, and off they went. There was a depression, and the depression came, economic hard times hit, and then the Civil War, you know, stuff, you know, and they just died out. Didn't exist anymore. I love Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
I really do. I do not want that to happen to Narcotics Anonymous. If I have a fear in my heart of hearts, it is that sometime it's just not going to be relevant anymore. Just NA is just not, you know, it's just, we're just going to quit, you know. It's like, I got something else to do, you know, in my heart of hearts. You know why? Because I'm the kind of addict who, if that happens, I die. And I know that. I get that. You know, there's nothing like NA that I've ever been to. And you know, when I say there's nothing like NA that I've ever been to, I'll tell you, you know, I came in with this approach to everything good in my life, which was, but you don't understand, I am different. I am different. That was really the way I approached everything. My story is that I have a 13-year-old twin sister, and when she was 13, she came to me and she said, you know, Alan, had no idea at that time how involved in drugs I was. I mean, she really had no idea at all. I'm not sure what she could have done at the time, even if she had known. But she came to me and she said, you know, I've tried drinking with my friends and I've tried smoking pot. And Alan, you know, it makes me feel separated from God, and I just can't do that. And I thought, you know, I'm different. I'm just not like that. And in fact, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous and I saw people in Narcotics Anonymous getting clean and staying clean, what I saw was people who had a drug problem coming in here and they stopped using. And after they didn't use for a period of time, what I saw was their lives get better. And I thought, God, I almost wish I was like that. I almost wish that it was just the drugs that did it to me. I almost wish that by using drugs, I so messed up my life and my relationships with everybody else by my single-minded focus on the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, that I had so messed up my relationships with everybody that if I stopped doing that, they would magically fix themselves. Because you see, that's what I saw happening to you guys. I saw you guys coming in, getting clean, you stopped using, and things got better. But I'm not like that. And I know I'm not like that. You see, and that's what I said. You don't understand. I am different, you know. Because what happens to me when I stay clean and I don't work the steps is I go crazy, just like I told you when I started this thing. I am a, you know, a mismanager to my core, and I start making decisions that seem completely reasonable to me that are not. Like, you know, like, she's really hot and she's kind of crazy, but I don't care, you know. Now, that can be a reasonable decision to me. Or, you know what, it's like it's going to be expensive, but if I don't like it, I can take it back, you know. And things like that. And it's like, you know, I have to have money because I have checks. And even if I don't, there's a float, you know, and I can play this float and make it work and stuff like that. And those kind of decisions happen to me because on some level, I really believe that it's the rules don't apply to me, really. Not like that, really, for sure, for real. And so what I got was that you guys lived by a different set of rules and a different reality than I did. My sister, in fact, didn't use drugs. She doesn't have the disease of addiction, as best I can tell. She maintained her spiritual connection with God. And I will tell you, as far as I can tell, she in fact has lived a very happy life. She's still alive. She's got kids. I have a nephew who just graduated as an RN, going back to get her doctor's degree. Her brother is now working to get he wants to be a surgeon, but he's down in South America now, kind of giving it away down there, you know, on a scholarship because he thinks that's what you do and to live life and stuff like that. I mean, as far as I can tell, she, you know, and I have years after years after years, I have looked at her and said, but I am different. I am just not like that. You know, I wish I was. I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I wish I was. I wish I was like you guys. God, that would have been so perfect. You know, I'm in a solution, finally, to all the madness. But I'm not. You know, I know that. I have two problems. One is I can't use because the way I use gets out of control. And when I say I am powerless over drugs, I will tell you it's not that every single time I use it, I wind up in jail and I wreck cars and all that. But sometimes I do. And I don't know when. I can't tell you if today's the time. I can't tell you if this is a run or if this is a use. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's a powerlessness there. And I am unmanageable at my core in my life. So, and that's when I'm clean. So I can be clean and not working the steps and making bad decisions. A couple years ago, I made a bad decision. I quit my job. Now, I quit my job thinking, I really, in my heart of hearts, my little dope fiend soul, I thought that, you know what, I am good at what I do. And I'm so good at what I do, I'm going to put that on paper and I'm going to quit this damn job. Well, these people don't appreciate me anyway like they ought to, because I know how good I am. They apparently don't understand. I am going to quit this job and I'm going to go get another one tomorrow. Well, okay, maybe a week. I mean, you know, if it takes a long time, in my bones I thought it couldn't possibly take more than 4 or 5, 6 months. So, okay, 4 or 5 or 6 months at the outside. So, okay, fine. So I quit my job. And guess what? I was unemployed for 2 years. Hello. You know, what's that? What kind of rule is that? I say unemployed. The reality is that I've been self-employed. You know how we are. You know, we get out there and we scam a little of this and we put a little of that together and we get a couple of friends and say, hey, I like what you're doing. How can I glom on? But, I mean, it's been like that for a while, you know. And it's because, you know, and it's not surprising to me that's the same year that my sponsor said, you know, dude, I'm tired of this stuff, you know. I've been your sponsor for 18 years and that's been important to me and the relationship is wonderful and fundamental, but you know, I'm not going to do this NA stuff like I have been. I'm going to go do some other programs and I'm going to find my recovery elsewhere, and as best I know, he has. He has. But what that meant was you're fired. And it's not surprising, you know, that's that same year. Now, what was up with that, you know, I don't know. I mean, but I will tell you that that when I said I am different, and that what that means is that I can't stay clean, and I can't use. And so it's just like our literature says, we get to a point where, you know, we go on, you know, the only solution left is to go on to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death. Or find a new way to live, new way to live. And that's, and believe it or not, in my mind, that brings us to the 12 concepts. All right. You knew I was going to get back to the 12 concepts. Y'all can leave now if you want. I am, the 12 concepts of service address the following problem. The traditions were, and this, by the way, comes from the book, The 12 Concepts. The traditions empower the groups to create a service structure directly responsible to them. Okay, the traditions are about, you know, getting us together in groups. And so what happens with the traditions that the traditions solve is the Washingtonian problem. The Washingtonian problem was they just lost their focus. You know, they didn't have a spirit of the groups getting together and consolidating with the groups. And, you know, you can't go out and affiliate yourself with causes and practices and things like that. What is more important than that is the groups bring themselves together and work together to be able to form a unified service structure. That's what the traditions are designed to do. It's led by the group conscience, and so the traditions were designed to protect us from that problem, and they have done a very good job. Narcotics Anonymous has been around for a long time now, you know, and I think it's because we adopted the traditions, and we said we are going to follow those traditions. And so, however, although although the traditions are here to be able to help the groups and protect the groups from the natural tendency of organizations and groups to be able to say, if this is a good idea, then this plus this has got to be a better idea. And, you know, and so, you know, you wind up with, not only are we going to meet and find recovery from an active addiction, but we're going to, I don't know, open up a sewing circle and we're going to go talk about, you know, politics. And let's add stuff because we'll get more people in there, you know. And cross-addicted knitting, you know, politicians will show up to our meetings. And you know, we got to reach out to these, you know, interest groups we might otherwise miss and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, maybe we don't need to really reach out like that. Let's just stick with what we have and they can find us. But now here's where the problem comes in my brain, and that is they can find us is not really right. Now, I was down at a World Service symposium down in Florida not long ago, and one of the things that we talked about at this NA World symposium was outreach to professionals. And I had a chance to sit at a table with some other people. There was a sitting judge from the drug court down in Fort Lauderdale. There was somebody from the Physicians Network group. There was somebody with the RN group, the nurses group, I am an attorney and part of what's called Lawyers Helping Lawyers, which is a group for impaired lawyers. And so we had a group of professionals who were getting together within a world service and world board members to be able to talk about outreach to these people. Now, and here's why I think that's important. I think because Narcotics Anonymous is a ball, but around Narcotics Anonymous, the invisible support structure of Narcotics Anonymous are the courts who say to people, go to 12-step meetings. Go to those meetings and see if you can meet people in there who can help you. There are the psychologists and the psychiatrists and the treatment facilities and the ministers and the people like that. They're the neighbors who don't have a drug problem, the parents and families and brothers and sisters of addicts who are desperately hoping to find addicts a place to go to be able to find recovery. That support structure is what keeps us alive. That's what keeps Narcotics Anonymous alive. And it is very important to them, I believe, that they know what we are about. Now, and when I say know what we are about, it's the following way. Public information can go out there and give a whole lot of information about things. They can give pamphlets, they can give flyers, they can give meeting lists. But for real, nobody cares what you know until they know how much you care. They really don't care about the data until they get it that you really have it in your heart and that you are really about helping addicts recover. And when they get that, they're showing up. They're showing up. And so the 12 concepts of service are ideas. They are concepts. They are the concepts and ideas that underlie the reason why we have a service structure and the way our service structure works. And these concepts and ideas are, you know, they're written kind of, you know, arcanely in some. Group conscience is the spiritual means by which we invite a loving God to influence our decisions. Now, when you hear that, you know, somebody on the outside actually would probably understand that more than they would say, they would understand, well, we're having a group conscience tonight so we can vote on whether or not we should change our policy. Now, if they heard you're having a group conscience to decide on to vote, a group conscience to vote to decide to change a policy, now wait a minute, you know. But if you said, well, group conscience is how we make decisions because it allows us to be able to bring a loving God into our decision-making process, they'll be like, oh, okay, I get that. I get that. What you're telling me is that you apply principles. You have faith beliefs that you are trying to bring into everything you do in all areas and aspects of your life. Okay, now I get that. And so our concepts, all of them are like that. For each responsibility assigned to the service structure, a single point of decision and accountability should be clearly defined. That's concept number 5. You know, again, that's not in our traditions per se, but what that's telling us and what we need to do about this is something, again, that support structure would understand. Because the judge that I talked to from the drug court in Fort Lauderdale turned to us and said, I send people to Narcotics Anonymous. I send them to Narcotics Anonymous, but I haven't a clue who I'm sending them to. I don't know where they're showing up. There is something called a PI committee and or an H and something committee, H and I committee, H and whatever committee. I send them off to there, and you know, I don't know who those people are, and I don't really get feedback from them. So, you know, what I am not, in fact, the only thing I ever hear is when I see a repeat offender come in here and say, oh, that don't work. I went to those, and you know what, they're all a bunch of whatever, a clique, and those people don't work, and they're all a bunch of, you know, they talk about stuff I don't understand, and they weren't friendly to me, and, you know, I don't like their coffee, and so, you know, I can't get clean there, you know, or whatever. And so the judge will send 100 people out. 95 may get clean in Narcotics Anonymous. One comes back. And that's all the judge hears. Because there's not a single point of accountability for that judge to be able to know and to be able to bounce things off of, you know. And some of it, and what they want, of course, is they want to be able to get generalized feedback. You know, she's like, look, I wind up seeing 25 a day. I send a bunch of them off, you know, 100 a week. I don't care about names. But what I care about is it working for you and is it working for me? Are there meetings that you want addicts to go to from my court that you would prefer them to go to because they carry a message to the people who are involved in a court system, or as opposed to people coming out of treatment, or as opposed to people walking out? Is there a difference? I don't know. I mean, she doesn't know. You know, I mean, that's not her deal. Her deal is I'm a judge. You know, that's completely different than being an addict, I've been told. And the same thing was true, however, with the physicians group that I had there. In fact, the same thing is true in general. And so what we get is that, you know, in order for them to be able to know that we really care, they need to find somebody. There needs to be a single point of accountability for them to be able to touch base with about, okay, I get that you care. You know, you, Alan, care about what's going on. And so when I talk to you, Alan, you know, I get a sense about what Narcotics Anonymous is about. Narcotics Anonymous is as a fellowship about people who care about sick and dying addicts and who are trying to find a new way of living because they've gotten to the point where they can't keep using and they can't not use. And it's jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way of living. And so I get that you, Alan, care about those people. You want to bring them to a point of freedom. Now, that's the kind of thing that makes Narcotics Anonymous strong. That's why we are able to exist. And one of the things I heard from, this was from the RN group, they said, you know what, Narcotics Anonymous is really strong at, if you can find the meeting, we'll bring you in. You'll have 30 days or 30 seconds or something, and you'll be the coffee maker before you leave that meeting. You know, you will have a service position. You'll be a greeter. You'll have 30 days. You'll go to an area service. You will walk out the literature chair. I did. You know, I mean, that's what happened to me, actually. It was a regional. I was the regional literature chair for the C&P region of Narcotics Anonymous in 1985. I walked into a region and they were like, we're looking for volunteers. And I went, excuse me. And they said, okay, you're I'm like, that's the last time I'm going to put my hand up around you people. But, but there it was. Narcotics Anonymous is good at bringing them in once you get there. But we're kind of like a secret society. The truth is we really are kind of hard to find. You know, I mean, people down at the crack house aren't talking about where the NA meeting is tomorrow, you know. But those are the people we want to come to our meetings, right? I mean, people down there who are trying to cop, you know, dope, you know, the runners aren't running around saying, well, let me get you a Billy, and oh, by the way, here's a meeting list. But those are the people we want, you know? I mean, those are who we are, for real, you know? And so the question becomes, you know, how do we get people to be able to find out who we are and where we are and what we're about and stuff like that. Well, a lot of what we do is we rely on this invisible infrastructure around us. We absolutely rely on them. I was around when it used to be that the treatment centers would get them in, spin them, send them to a meeting, and bill the insurance companies, you know, and that's, you know, kind of what they were doing. And I will say one thing, one advantage that had is it got a lot of people into our meetings who got a message. Now many of them left, most of them left. I mean, for real, most, but some came back. You know, and so, you know, there, that was an example of something that actually was kind of sort of working for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it does not work as well as a service structure that is alive and dynamic and, you know, pumped up. And I'll tell you, there is at least one that I know of, and that's in this country of Iran. Now, I'm getting a little bit away, but I will tell you the reason I bring up Iran in this context is Iran is all about the 12 concepts of service, but they don't follow our service structure the same way we've got it set up in the Guide to Local Service. They've got some things different. Why? Because in order to implement the concepts, in order to be able to make sure that they are working to carry the message to the still suffering addict, they had to do things a bit differently. That's all right, you know. I mean, again, what we're trying to do is make it work. The data I read was that the worldwide, most of the basic texts are sold in English. The next most are sold in Farsi. That fellowship is so alive that they are buying more basic texts than any other language except English. They've got over 1.5 million IPs were sold last year in the country of Iran. This is Iran. You know, you can't get State Department people into Iran. You know, I mean, people are talking about, but Narcotics Anonymous is in Iran. Why? Because our focus is not on that kind of stuff. Our focus is on carrying the message to the still suffering addict. And when we carry the message to a still suffering addict and they know how much you care, they want to know what you know and how you did it. And so they wind up reading the steps. Now, one of the issues they had with the steps is they were like, the steps are all written in the past tense. The steps don't say, we come to believe that it's going to happen and we're going to do this kind of stuff and I'm going to take an inventory or whatever. What it is all written by people who have already done the 12 steps, our predecessors show up and say, this is what we did in order to get our recovery. Yeah. And they're like, well, we ain't got very many of them already done them. So it's, you know, people are sitting there and they thought that when you read the steps, people who were reading the steps were supposed to be the people who had worked the steps. And so you were supposed to be reading them like, you know, like you were somebody who had already been there and done that. And they said, we don't have those kind of people. So how can we say we continue to take a personal inventory when nobody's ever gotten the 10th step? And they're like, you know, just keep coming. You know, find a way to bridge that difference, you know, and keep coming. But the point is well made. The point is that, you know, we have a service structure over there that is absolutely alive. I got to say this too. Some World Board members went over to Iran, and they showed up for a meeting, and a fairly large meeting. You know, I think a couple hundred people were supposed to be at this meeting. And they showed up there, and without any advertising, no flyers, no nothing going out, there was over 1,000 people in that meeting. And a couple of days later, they went to another meeting that was supposed to be even larger, like around 300 or 400 people, and they wound up driving past the meeting location and going to the stadium. Why? Because they had 10,000 people who showed up. No advertisements, no flyers, no radio announcements, 5 days' notice. It's on the outskirts of Tehran. There's not connect. There's no bus line. Most of the people probably walked a couple miles it took to get there. And they had 10,000 people who showed up because they wanted to see these people with long-term recovery showing up. When Becky showed up, Becky runs our World Service office, when she showed up to speak, they had never known that a woman could have 20 years clean. Never. They said, there's 10,000 people in this stadium. And when she got up and said, hi, my name is Becky, I'm an addict, there was dead silence. Dead silence. They just didn't know what to do. until somebody goes, "Hi, Becky," and people go, "Hi, Becky," and it starts swelling, and you finally get the response. They were stunned at that, and so they were showing up for that. But get what happened. They went to go show up. Now, why did they go show up? Because I will tell you that the people I have met who are involved in our World Service for Narcotics Anonymous are just like the people who you are involved in Regional Service, who are just like the people who are involved in Area Service, who are just like those people who have been making your meetings happen a long time. They get it. They're alive for Narcotics Anonymous. They would say, just like I did, "I love Narcotics Anonymous. I will absolutely say that anywhere to anyone." You know? I have said it in all kinds of places where sometimes I didn't mean it, you know. I mean to have said it, I'm sorry. You know, it's a business meeting and I'm walking in and we're sitting down and "Hi, I'm Alan, I'm a..." you know. But, you know, sometimes it happens like that, you know. But for real, I don't care. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and it is the fact is, if I go down in history as being somebody who is remembered because he's all about being in NA, that's fine. I have said this before. If Narcotics Anonymous would allow me to be, I would be a poster child for Narcotics Anonymous. I would. You could plaster me up and say, "This fool believes this shit works," you know. And I would be completely okay with that. There is a one of the aspects of Narcotics Anonymous that I am going to say, and that is it in our fourth concept says, "Effective leadership is highly valued in Narcotics Anonymous. Leadership quality should be carefully considered when selecting trusted servants." You know? Now, I'm seeing heads nodding. You know that that's true. But there's another sentence in here that defines that even more carefully. And I want to bring this up because I think this is extremely important. And that is, "Capable NA leadership exhibits the full range of personal characteristics associated with a spiritual awakening." Now get that. I'm going to say that again real close. "Capable NA leadership exhibits the full range of personal characteristics associated with a spiritual awakening." Because this is a fundamentally spiritual program. Our service center has got to be a fundamentally spiritual service center. And that means selfless service. It means showing up and giving when and as you can. Now, I'm going to move into something now that this is completely Alan's opinion. But I want to tell you because it's this important to me. We have one of the things that was on my ninth step amends was I helped the Nirvana area of NA, Northern Virginia area of NA, draft a policy. And I am so sorry I didn't have more recovery when I did it. Because that policy envisioned, because, you know, I have a lawyer's kind of a brain, and that policy envisioned rules and structure and a committee structure, and there was going to, you know, we were going to follow Robert's rules, and we were going to vote on things, and we were going to make motions and second motions and move to accept the minutes and you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I will tell you, I think that if I'd had more recovery, I know if I'd had more recovery, I would have revisited that. Because what I have seen year after year after decade in service in Narcotics Anonymous is we are more focused on, we need to have a committee chair, a policy vice chair. So you are a very competent person, whoever you is. Why don't you be the policy vice chair? Instead of stopping and saying, "You're a really competent person. Now, what should we do with you? How can we best, most effectively use Narcotics Anonymous resources to be able to further our primary purpose?" You know, we're worried about having a structure and filling the positions within the structure and having defined obligations and responsibilities within that structure and stuff like, if you're a GSR, you can't be a subcommittee chair. And if you're a subcommittee chair, you can't vote. Or if you've missed two area services, then you can't vote until after you show up and you've been represented for a while and you haven't paid, you know, you haven't sent a GSR, so we're going to drop you from our meeting list and on. And I will tell you, I think it diverts us from the spiritual part of our service structure, which says that we are trying to carry the message to the still sick and suffering addicts, and that we are the still sick and suffering addicts trying to carry the message to the still sick and suffering addicts. You know? What we're trying to do is get together and make this thing work together, you know? We're just a bunch of mismanagers trying to get together and trying to convince somebody that we got something that they want. I have heard time and again, and I think this is true for me, that, you know, it's my act of addiction was like shuffling the chairs on the Titanic. And I will tell you, I think that's true. And I think what happened was I was trying to get high and I snuck into the lifeboat so that I thought I could take a couple of quick hits. The thing hit an iceberg, the lifeboat got dropped into the ocean, and now I'm in recovery and I don't know why. You know? It's like, you don't understand, I was trying to just kind of catch another one and I didn't mean to, you know. And my chair just happened to wind up in the lifeboat. I don't get it, but here I am, you know. And that is the attitude of service that I think we can bring to other people when we want to get them involved in this attitude of service. And what it does is it says, let us get together and talk about what we're doing. Let's have an area inventory in the same way that we could have a group inventory, in the same way we could have an individual inventory. What is working? And what's not? What are we willing to do? Like, for example, it may be that what is really working is something that we are not willing to do. The Northern Virginia area, for year after year, had a camp out, and everyone really liked it, but the people who were doing it got burnt out. And they were like, we're just not willing to do this anymore. And they just said, y'all can do it. And so what we found out at that time was we were willing to have it but not do it. You know? Well, you see, now that's an important thing to know. I mean, you know, and so when people are out there doing things, you know, it's important to know. What about H&I? I mean, H&I might be an example of however we're doing our H&I, we are willing to have it done but not willing to do it. Means we are not willing to do it. Let's get bottom line on this one, you know? I mean, and show up. Because working the steps and the traditions and the concepts in my life means I will show up and tell you what I'm willing to do and what I'm not really willing to do. Because, you see, having an H&I committee means that we are willing to go to an H&I meeting. It doesn't mean we're willing to go to the committee meeting. It means we're willing to take a meeting into a hospital or an institution or somewhere else that needs to hear that message. That's what it means. Now, and if you're a GSR, being a GSR in an area service does not mean that you are the one who comes in and votes. It means that you are the person who, along with the other people who represent other groups, are creating the area service. And what does the area service do? The area service does outreach, and it does public relations, public information kind of work, and it does H&I work, which means that you as the GSR are doing that. Now, how are you doing that? Well, I know for a while when I was doing it, I was doing it by doing nothing. That's how I was doing it. I would go in there and I would buy the literature and I would carry the money and I would, you know, and I would show up and I would vote on stuff because I like that kind of thing because that's my personality. I just make stuff up to vote on, you know. I make a motion that we move the area service to the third Tuesday of every month just because it's convenient for me kind of thing. And after all, it's all about me anyway, isn't it? And everybody would say, well, having failed to reach a second, you know, that we will go on, you know, I call for the order of the day. I'm saying this because what that means is that I was a GSR doing nothing. 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 Why? How do you measure that? You measure it by which suffering addict did I help by doing that? I certainly didn't help myself. you know, by showing up in my own little self-centered way. So, and I wasn't helping anybody else there. What am I? I'm educating you in Robert's rules, you know? I mean, that's going to help you in your recovery? I don't think so. So, you know, the fact is, I'm not showing up to help the still suffering addict. So what am I doing? What am I doing? Well, I'm breathing. I don't know, wasting space. I don't know. I mean, you know, we all have an opinion on what I was doing. But the point is, I was not carrying the message to the still suffering addict. I was not helping my group do it. I wasn't helping my area help my group do it. And so what I'm encouraging here is I'm encouraging a thing called consensus-based decision-making and getting together and doing it. This is really the bottom line I'm trying to promote here. And I'm promoting it only because I believe it, personally. You know, and I believe that the underlying spiritual principles support that. What they say is that, like, for example, one of our concepts says that the NA groups delegate to the service structure the authority necessary to fulfill the responsibilities designed to that. Well, let me tell you what I think that means. I think that means when the GSRs get together and say we're going to have a special events committee, what that means is that the GSRs are saying, and I am going to delegate some of my time and effort in doing that. So the delegation of responsibility is not separate from the individual. The delegation of responsibility is it's my personal responsibility that I am delegating. So I am delegating some of myself, some of my personal responsibility. Now, what am I responsible for? My attitudes, the resources that God's given me, my recovery. I am allocating some of that to whatever function we're doing. And that means I'm going to show up for a service commitment with a decent attitude, with some time to be able to be involved. And I'm not saying show up just because somebody else wants me to show up. I'm saying I'm going to show up with what I have available to give. And I'm going to bring my recovery with me when I get there, so that if I'm dealing with personalities and stuff that it conflicts with me, if I'm dealing with I think this is right but group conscience thinks that is right, I'm going to go with group conscience. When I'm showing up, delegating the responsibility means I am delegating my personal responsibility to being a part of Narcotics Anonymous. And I do it because I love Narcotics Anonymous. You know? And it is not about Narcotics Anonymous loving me. Although I know many of you do. I know many of you do. You know? And thank God for that. Because, you know, I'm a tough case. You know? Because if I was not... If I was not, when I was 13 years old and my sister said, smoking pot separates me from God, I would have gotten it. And I would have said, yeah, I get it. I get it. But you see, I didn't get that. I didn't even get that she was loving me. You know what I got? I got that she was lecturing me. I got that she's saying, you're going down the road to perdition, Alan. That's what I heard. And I'm like, you know, oh. See, it was a long time before I even got around to, no, wait, she was trying to tell me something that's very real for her about recovery. And it was a long time after that before I thought, maybe this does work for me. See, one of the things I have learned in my recovery is that I was wrong then. Just like I was wrong about that job situation, I was wrong when I said, I can't do that. Don't you see, I'm different. Because as different as I am, I was confusing time and circumstance and place with fundamental selfness or fundamental attitude or whatever. The truth is that for me, that I have learned is I am not as different as I would like to believe. You see, by focusing on the outside, you know, I'm missing the inside. And on the inside is there's a lot of things that I do connect with. I do connect with a loving higher power now. The 11th step is meaningful in my life. I've even learned to meditate in recovery, and I tell you that was a struggle for me because I had a bias against it. It was like meditation is a great thing, it's wonderful, and it's not part of my religion. You know, and I had and it's like, well, look, this doesn't say you're going to take your program and then, you know, use some Narcotics Anonymous tools to be able to work your own program. What it says is you're going to work the Narcotics Anonymous program. And if out of that you get some idea about what your program might be like, well, come talk to me. And then so what I did was I went and learned to meditate. But and the point there is not that I can learn new things. which is a miracle in itself. But the point there really was simply that I have learned that what works for people works for Alan. That I really am, at some level, a person. My God, what a concept that was. You know, and if it works for you, it can work for me. And so, and I have learned that. There is there's a workshop coming up that is about the language of empathy. And I will tell you, it is what keeps me here, and it's what connects me to you guys. It's what keeps us connected together. Because we really can sit down and talk to each other. When those five drunks got together in Baltimore and they turned to each other and said, "Nobody understands me. The courts don't understand me. You know, I drink because I feel so constrained and my life is falling apart." And so when I drink, they said to each other, they said, "I'm drinking to be normal." I felt that way. The truth is, I felt like that. I felt like in order to be like other people, I needed to be able to get high, to be able to be normal like others. You know, how do you get happy? Well, you know, I couldn't find it inside. So I needed to put it inside so that I could be happy like other people can be happy. And what I have found is that that is not the solution for me. And it's not the solution, not because it doesn't work for some people, but it doesn't work for me. And what I have found also is that what does work with me is just spending time with you. Spending time with you. I am not one of these, softer, kinder, gentler, huggy kind of guys. I'm not like that, you know. But what I will tell you is that after I've wound up going out to eat with you and we've shared and we've talked and we've driven to the convention together or we've spent time doing step work or we've done other things like that, what I have found is that I got a connection there. And it's like, damn, I belong somewhere. You know, I belong somewhere with you, with me. I have a right to be here, to live here. I love Narcotics Anonymous. That's just it. I just love Narcotics Anonymous. And thanks for letting me share.